the finest in classic ska, rock steady, rockers, DJ, dance hall, and dub. It's Jamon. Cecil here, bringing you Southwest Louisiana's longest running reggae tradition, Jamon. Jamon, Sunday nights from 9 to 11 p.m. or Saturday mornings from 1 to 3 a.m. and streaming live anytime at krvs.org.
Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody, welcome to Stirring It Up, and thank you so much for being with us at the kitchen table today. It's so nice to have all of you here on this January 5th, and I hope everybody had a great New Year's and a great New Year's Eve bash. And I want to begin by welcoming Michelle York, our executive producer. How's your New Year's?
Good.
New Year's
is How good. About you? Happy New
it was
Year.
Good. Happy New Year to you, too. Mine was good. I had Revy on New Year's Eve, and then, of course, I had my New Year's Day. The restaurant was open as well. It was good. What about you over there, Dean? Slama, our great engineer.
Yeah, we made it through another one, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
2013.
We did. That's exactly right. Driving back from New Orleans that night, I set my cruise on 60. I was being very careful.
Yeah. Yeah, the quarter was kicking. It was wild.
It was crazy. I'm going to tell you right now, it was crazy. And to be at ground zero on New Year's Eve, ground zero, that means Bourbon and Bienville, right on the corner where Restaurant Revolution is located. I don't have to tell you, right? I'll tell you what.
You were among the revelers.
No, I didn't. I hid myself, locked myself in the bathroom until 10 after 12. I didn't want to be a part of all that noise. But anyway, y'all, it's so great to have you, and we wish you all a very happy New Year and a very pleasant, prosperous, safe, and healthy 2013. That's my wish to everyone.
Absolutely.
Just having celebrated New Year's, there's another huge celebration, a great, great, great birthday bash of the year. And by the way, it's happening tonight, and I bet you know all about it.
Of course I do. The one and only Leah Chase, Queen of Creole Cooking. It is her 90th birthday.
90th birthday. Wow. It's absolutely amazing because I remember back 10 years ago when I did her 80th birthday party at our restaurant, Bittersweet Plantation in Donaldsonville, and it was so nice. I brought in 80 of her family members and friends, and we did her 80th birthday, and she is just as active. She is still running her restaurant. You still see Leah behind the stove at W. Chase every single day, and tonight, as you say, we're celebrating her 90th birthday.
We are, and I love one of Leah's most famous sayings. I know she said it to you often, and I can just hear, John?
No, John. She called me John.
Cooking is just like religion. Rules don't no more make a cook than sermons make a saint.
That's exactly.
I think there was a message in there.
True words ever spoken. You're exactly right. Well, that certainly fits Leah Chase. Over the many years that I've known Leah, I've come to truly appreciate Creole heritage and Creole cooking, which are virtually intertwined and certainly inseparable. But both are beautiful mixtures of cultures and flavors and ingredients that come together to create something new.
That's right. And, you know, the term Creole probably came from the Latin word creare, meaning to create. As early as 1520, the Spanish conquistadors invented the word criolla, which the French changed later on to Creole. In 1590, the term began being used to distinguish newborn West Indies children from everyone else in New Orleans.
And the term can be confusing. And, of course, even amongst Louisianians who's lived here, even those who are in the business of teaching things like this, there's always been a lot of confusion. There's many definitions, but it was never intended to designate race or color, the word Creole. With intercultural relationships in the New World taking root, offsprings and descendants were not Spanish or French or African or Native American. They were newly created people, so to speak. They were in the New World, and Creole signified newborn on Native soil.
Mm-hmm.
The Portuguese used the word Creola to designate a slave of African descent born on Native soil. They were no longer from Senegal, or they were no longer from the Gambia region. They were born here, so they were Creolas, so to speak.
Well, it's no wonder there's so much confusion. The word kind of evolved over time, and as new cultural influences took hold, Creole came to mean the newborn children of French or European parents living in Louisiana.
In the colony, so to speak. Yeah.
That's right. Now, of course, George Washington Cable, he was, you know, a famous Creole author, he kind of took exception.
Well, a lot of people took exception for different reasons. I mean, children born in the New World or whatever, you know, there were certain stigmas against the African slaves or the Native Americans who were considered not to have a soul at some point because they lived in the wilds, etc. So, I mean, people were taking liberties with that. Being a French purist, George Washington Cable believed that the title belonged to the descendants of the French and should not be shared with any other European nationality. He felt that there were no Sicilian, English, Scots, Irish, or even Acadian Creoles unless they were of Creole parents who were thoroughly converted into Creole societies. I mean, it was much more about aristocracy than it was about bloodline, right?
And I guess that designation kind of stuck because Creole came to imply excellence of origin or excellence of social rank, and being Creole became truly an honor.
That's exactly right, and people start to designate, you know, Creole as a cut above. They were culturally active. This is also how you started to measure people, the way they dressed, the way they talked, the way they act, their education. They attended the opera. They were very pious, so to speak. They felt strongly about family. They behaved socially proper, and they believed in a very high quality education. Many were educated privately by European teachers, and many even sent their children back to Europe because they felt that that was important to a Creole child. There were the society of Creoles. Eventually,
so kind of a caste system
within themselves, sure. Because again, it was how you dressed, it was how you talked, it was how you walked, it was where you went to school, it was who you knew, it was who you married into.
Yeah.
All of that designated a class even amongst the Creoles themselves. Louisiana's great mixture of cultures broadened the meaning even further to designate the children born of mixed blood, and even more to encompass things like furniture and architecture and music and certainly food.
Absolutely, like the Creole tomatoes that we talk about,
right,
or
right,
Creole
huh?
onions. And of course, there was also Creole architecture, quality and construction of the Creole plantations. And of course, you were born on one of those plantations, Cabanossi.
Yeah, Cabanossi Plantation, you know, the use of cypress and the walnut furniture that was then painted to look like these beautiful mahoganies, and the detached kitchens and houses, the wide, expansive front porches, the raised basements, like Cabanossi Plantation that was built in the late 1700s that my grandfather eventually bought in the Great Depression and ended up raising sugar and rice there. I was born at Cabanossi in St. James Parish. In fact, Cabanossi, named after the Indian word for that area, meaning clearing where ducks roosted. You know, it was a very interesting time. It was an interesting place, needless to say, where Creole was founded.
So it's not surprising that by the 1800s, Louisiana was known as the Creole State. And Creole came to describe anyone born on Louisiana soil, from the intermarriage of Europeans, Africans, Native Americans, all of those cultures who contributed significantly to the culture and cuisine of Louisiana.
No doubt about it. And again, even when you and I wrote the book, The Encyclopedia of Cajun and Creole Cuisine, I mean, I know we've discussed
with great passion how we would describe Creole.
Right.
Because based on history and our research, we came to understand that to be Creole actually evolved to mean being born on native soil here in Louisiana. So how could we omit the Native Americans, because they had children with the Europeans.
That's right.
And those offsprings were the mixtures born on native soil. What about the Africans? Many of the planters' sons and planters had these concubines and they had children. And why were they not legitimately called Creole? It wasn't their fault there was these trysts going on that created these children, but they were born on native soil of mixture. So you and I came to the conclusion that to be Creole should in fact be defined as the children born of the intermarriage here on native soil of the nations that significantly contributed to what we call Creole and even Cajun cuisine. So we talked about the children of the intermarriage of the Native Americans, the French, the Spanish, the Germans, the Africans, the English, and the Italians, those seven nations that came here from the 1620s all the way to the 1860s to create the Creole.
And the term Creole is still evolving, and I think will continue to evolve, because as time goes on, more nationalities come into the mixture. There's a large Vietnamese population in New Orleans, the Filipino population, Spanish, Mexican, eventually be considered Creole.
Well, I think you and I answered that in the book, The Encyclopedia, where we clearly said at the end, will Creole culture evolve? And we said, we hope so, because then it would be a recognition of those cultures who, in fact, continues to significantly contribute to the growth of using the Louisiana products, Louisiana soil, and all of that. So no doubt about it. And I think the Encyclopedia of Cajun and Creole Cuisine really studied deeply into some of the myths. And again, I think people just started to designate everything in Louisiana Creole because they wanted a bit of that feeling of aristocracy. I think it was very important that we kind of clear up some of that as best we could. As you know, Michelle, with a mix like this, you can't help but think of the good in the kitchen, right? I mean, the African and island influences added spice to the French dishes. And one of the things about being Creole is their celebration of la joie de vivre, the joy of life. It's definitely a great conversation for us to be having today.
Well, and I think it's safe to say that one of our favorite Creoles, if not our favorite Creole lady, would have to be Leah Chase.
Well, and that's why she's named the Queen of Creole Cooking.
And loved far and wide, much beyond New Orleans.
She's become an icon throughout America, and certainly she's become a guidepost for so many young women, especially African-American women who are coming into the professional kitchens and using Leah Chase as that guidepost, that lighthouse, to realizing that it can be done if you put your heart to it. So what better mix than good food, good conversation with Leah Chase? And when we come back, that's exactly what we're going to do on her night of great celebration in her honor in New Orleans. We'll talk about that as well. We'll see you in a minute.
My Creole bear, I love her well. My darling baby, my Creole bear. My Creole bear, I love her well. My darling baby, my Creole bear.
I'm Jake Hebert.
And I'm Adam Chouard. Join us every Friday at midnight for the Sound Club radio program.
Your home for left field pop gems from today to yesteryear.
Here on 88.7 FM KRVS.
Hi, I'm Pete Bergeron. If your day starts early, like mine does, let's spend it together with Cajun music from 5 to 7 a.m. here at Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
From the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, this is KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, now broadcasting in HD radio technology.
There's a man in New Orleans, he's a rock and roller, he's a guitar man with a great big soul. He lays down a beat like a ton of cola. He goes by the name of King Creole, you know he's gone, 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 jumping like catfish on a pole. Yeah, you know he's gone, 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 out of hip-shaking King Creole.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Starting It Up, the best-tasting food and culture show on radio. We cannot help but tie those two tightly together, right, Michelle?
That's exactly right.
And today we're talking about the Creole experience in Louisiana, and we just heard Elvis Presley saying a few words about it in his movie King Creole. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
It's funny that they were thinking about that in Elvis Presley's age. Mm-hmm. But today, Michelle, we have my baby. We have the queen of Creole cooking on the phone with us. Why don't you introduce her?
I would love to. Leah Chase is our guest today. We were talking about her a little earlier, and she is an epiphany child. Born January 6, 1923 in Madisonville, Louisiana, to Creole parents. In her youth, her parents sent her to live with relatives in New Orleans so that Leah could be educated at the prestigious St. Mary's Academy. She went to work right after high school, and not that long after, she fell in love. She met Edgar Dookie Chase II, got married. Dookie was a musician, and his parents owned the Dookie Chase restaurant. Well, Leah had worked in restaurants, and she started working in the family restaurant. And over time, she created a Creole menu reflective of her youth and her upbringing and her Creole heritage. Over these many years, Leah has garnered every award imaginable. She was inducted into the James Beard Foundation's Who's Who of Food and Beverage in America. She received the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Southern Foodways Alliance. She's received honorary degrees from Tulane, Dillard, Our Lady of Holy Cross, Madonna College, Loyola University, Johnson & Wales. I think she's got you beat. Degrees,
she's got me beat, and
say,
deservingly so. But she and I got a pile of them together.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. In 1997, the Times-Picayune awarded Leah the Loving Cup Award. And in 2009, the Southern Food and Beverage Museum in New Orleans named a permanent gallery in her honor. It is always a privilege and an honor to welcome Leah Chase, the queen of Creole cooking, to Stirring It Up, and especially today, her 90th birthday.
Ah, isn't that unbelievable? Leah Chase, how are you doing?
It's so good to have you. I'm fine, dear. I'm fine. I listened at all those awards you got me. You see, you got to be careful because you get people awards and they outdo you.
Leah, let me tell you, you're right now. You outdid me on awards. Look, I got a few of them, but I am so proud to say I'm right behind my baby, Leah. How are you doing? Happy birthday, first of all. My God,
well,
happy
thank
birthday.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm doing fine, John. I'm doing fine.
You sound great, Leah.
I feel good thanks to so many people who helped me. I tell you, Michelle and John, I owe so many people I can't afford to die. I better pay back.
Look, there's a famous phrase today, but you are the epitome of that phrase, and that is pay it forward, baby. Let me tell you something. You have done so much for so many people in your lifetime, and you are an example of people who did for people when you didn't have nothing for yourself. You were doing stuff for people, and I know that's true.
And, John, that's what, you know, they've given me a birthday party. My children want to do something, and I'm proud of them for wanting to do that for me. But I'm not comfortable on that end. I'm comfortable on my own end where I do for people, where I just do.
Well, you know, you said one time, and it really brings tears to the eyes of people who know you. You said, I'm not about the getting in. I'm on the giving in. People know that about you, Leah. And on your birthday today, on this beautiful night tonight where you're going to be honored and celebrated, it's just the world's way of saying we love you and we know what you've done for so many people. And now it's our time just to let you know, even though I know you know it already, how much you're loved by everybody in this country. I mean, just unbelievable.
I'm grateful, John, when I think about way back in that strawberry patch, picking those strawberries, I said, oh, Lord, And you feel good when you have come up a ways, people help you. And I think that's what we all ought to do, John, lift people up, just lift them up. It's good to see so many people. I met so many good people along the way that helped me up, just gave me that little lift I needed. You know, just tell me, come on, you can do this. You got to do this. Come on, come on. And you need that. You know, you really need that push, and I'm grateful. John, I owe you my life. John,
oh my
people
God,
don't
you
know
kidding?
All the things you did for me. You furnished 3 kitchens for me that I'm still cooking in. That is wonderful, and that bar is so beautiful. Thank you. I owe you my life.
Really. No, you don't owe me anything. I tell you what you do for me, Leah. You lift me up every day. I mean, you know, people need people in their lives that they know when times are rough, you can pick up the phone and call them. And they are just what you need at that time.
Right.
And you're that person I know. I can stop by there on one of my down days, and I know good and well I'm going to be there. I walked into your kitchen, and it was your 60th wedding anniversary, and I stood at the door, and I looked across the kitchen. You didn't even know I was there. You were leaning over the table, and you were chopping an onion, and you were stirring a pot. And I
always chopping something.
And I said to myself, you know what? This is what the world will never know about a woman I love so much, Leah Chase. Here it is, her 60th birthday, and all she's caring about right now is getting that onion chop right for her customers who's walking through
people.
That door in a little while. And those
John,
who don't
I've
even
been blessed.
Well, let me tell you, you've blessed so many people, including
I've
me,
been blessed
including Michelle
life, and
I.
I'm grateful.
Leah, I know we've had you on the show many times in the past, but today we just kind of wanted to talk a little bit about some of your upbringing and experiences. And you know, we were saying that you were born in Madisonville, and you mentioned the strawberry fields. Tell us about growing up in a Creole household. Tell us about your family.
Well, you learn to cook, for one thing. You learn to appreciate food, for one thing. Because no matter how poor you are, you know, Michelle, people were poor, 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 and they had really more than what they have today. We lost everything today. A young man told me that the other day. He said, you know, Miss Chase, we didn't have nothing when we grew up, but we had culture. We knew how to take out that good Octagon coupon dish to serve the company on. And we had nice food, plain food, but your mother sat you down to the table, Michelle.
Yeah.
You sat to the table and ate whatever she gave you to eat. So you always had that family come together. It was all about your family and how you came together over the dinner table. No matter what was on that plate, could be just beans and rice or greens and rice, you know. You didn't have meat till Sunday. Maybe you had it on Sunday. In the winter, you had that good pork that, you know, you had killed your pig and your hog and you had pork. It was just something that was well done and good. And John knows he goes way back. Of course, he'll never be able to roast that pig like his daddy did.
I thought we were friends here.
Daddy put that pig in that old clay oven and roasted like you don't believe. But you try and you learn how to appreciate everything. And I always picture John when he said, let's go chalk cane in that sugar cane field.
That's
but
right.
You were around that sugar cane. You were around what meant so much to you. And it was just a good feeling to see. When I come through there and see those sugar cane fields, that's just the best feeling I ever had, to see that and to see how people live. It's just a good feeling.
But Leah, I think what you're talking about is something that the United States and America today is suffering so much from, and that is a lack of the kitchen table. I mean, where families came around, and it wasn't a question of whether you were washing your hands and pushing your hair back out of your face and sitting at the table. When Daddy and Mama sat at the table, that meant everybody sat at the table. And it didn't matter what you had. It didn't matter. It was about the love. It was about the storytelling. It was about passing down the traditions. It was about realizing that old black iron pot sitting on the table was given to that table by a grandmother and a great-grandmother. And it was who was going to get it next. These are the things that's missing in America today, that detachment from what is important, that rooting that is so important that people took, that families brought to the table, the church, the family, the relatives.
Right.
We're missing that today, and Leah, we're seeing the results of it.
And it's bad news. We got to get back to people coming up with some kind of something under their belt, John. that's what gives me courage to keep going. When you go back and you say, ooh, look what we had here, and you keep going and you keep going. But they don't have that today, and you need that. It's bad. It's really bad. We have to do something about that, getting mamas to get them back to that dinner table.
Yeah, well, you know, I remember when I used to walk in and Daddy would be stirring something on the stove after Mama died and he was taking care of eight of us. You say, Daddy, what you cooking today? He said, I'm cooking y'all favorite. I'm cooking a long gravy.
And you're happy as a log.
Oh, my
gravy.
God. Well, you know what it was, Leo? You were safe. You had little squabbles with your brothers and your sister, but you know at night four of you were sleeping in the same bed. That's what we
That's
were doing.
That's right.
We were sleeping crossways the bed. I was 20 years old before I knew you were supposed to sleep the long way.
Same here, John. We were sleeping crossways the bed. All of us lined up crossways the bed. And poor mother, when it was cold and you didn't have enough blankets, she'd be finding everything to put on top of you so you wouldn't
That's
be cold.
Right. That's exactly right. It was some kind of funny, I tell you. But you grew up that way, and it was pretty spectacular. Look, Leo, we sitting here, look how many years later, talking about that image of the table in the long gravy.
That's right. That's your roots, and you just feel good about it. And that's what those people today don't have, and that's what I try to tell that with my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren. They are smarter than whips, but they missing that basic thing. At my age, look, if I come outside, it's pouring down rain, I say, thank you, Lord. If it's sunshine, and I say, thank you, Lord. I'm living. That's it. I'm living. Whatever you pour down, I can take if you give me the strength to take it. I can take it. And that's what keeps me going. I pray every morning, and that's the three rules my daddy told us to live by. First, you get up, you pray, you work, and do for others.
Yep, yep. Leah, Daddy used to tell us all those books on that shelf over there and all those books in those libraries. He said, that don't matter nothing if you don't do three things. He said, number
That's
one,
right.
Do what you say you're going to do. Number two, if you mess up your name, you go out and you fix it by telling somebody you're sorry for whatever you did. And number three, you just get up here so we can all go to church on Sunday. So you know those three things? All the books will just come together
That's
for
right.
you.
That's right. Look how simple that was, and you just did them, and it worked out for you.
Leah, tell us about you leaving Madisonville and coming to St. Mary's and then eventually your first job in New Orleans. What was that step like?
That was something hard for my daddy to do. He didn't want to let me come here to live. And then I took this job in the French Quarter. That was a big no-no, you know. All the Creoles of color worked in the sewing factory. But, John, you know how I'm kind of militant. I didn't want to work in the sewing factory. So I got a job at the French Quarter waiting tables. And that was the best thing ever happened to me in my life because that woman taught me how to appreciate restaurants that I had never seen in my life, for one thing. I had never seen the inside of a restaurant. Here I'm trying to work in one, but I learned so much. And when I came in here, that was the basis for me making this side of town come up. And when I think about it, John, I did a whole lot. The people couldn't go in those restaurants. It was only people like me who worked in them who knew what went on.
At that time, prior to integration, there were black restaurants, there were white restaurants, there was white-only mm-hmm. signs everywhere. And actually, I want to talk about you opening a restaurant to the doors where African-Americans and whites came together, and I do want to talk about that. But tell me about your first job.
It's a colonial restaurant on Charter Street. I'll never forget it. It was 535 Charter Street, right? Charter's off St. Peter. And I went to work. That was quite an experience for me because she served breakfast and lunch and dinner. And one day I started on the breakfast line, John. A lady ordered pancakes. I said, would you like some toast with it? She said, toast with pancakes? What do I know?
So you were new to the restaurant business.
And you know what? I would go in the kitchen, and I remember that chef, he didn't like me to come in. But if they had dishes to wash, I'd help him wash the dishes, and I'd look at what he was doing, and it was just a good experience for me.
Now, you created a special lunch dish that you told me one day you were sick and tired of watching. You
That's
created
what,
lunch that day.
After she closed the Colonial, the lady was getting old and she wanted to downsize. So she opened the coffee pot. And all the coffee pot served was, you know, breakfast in the morning and hamburgers and sandwiches like that, just hamburgers more or less. So I say, Mr. Bond, people want to eat more than sandwiches. Could we do one hot lunch? She said, yes, you could do that. If y'all can get it done, do it. So here, Lucia and I, we said, what are we going to cook? We didn't know it. I said, Creole wieners and spaghetti. You make that good tomato gravy, you put those wieners in there and spaghetti. The people ate it.
Now, Leah, I know you met Dookie. Tell us that story about what came about. How did you get to meet Dookie and then get into the business?
I met Dookie, and the strange thing, because I did not like musicians at all. Well, I didn't understand what music was all about and what musicians. I thought they were a bunch of crazy people. I like people like boxers, like baseball players, like people that denoted physical strength to me. I'm a stickler for physical and emotional strength. And those are the people that fascinated me. And here comes Dookie. And I wound up marrying Dookie.
And he was a musician, right?
He was a musician, and that was too funny, John, because Dookie was 18, and I was 23. Can you imagine that? And the people, oh, my poor mother-in-law, she had to always defend me. The people used to tell her, oh, that girl is not going to do this, and that girl is not going to do that. And my mother-in-law was such a sweetheart, she said, she is going to do good. My son loves her, and that's it. He's going to do good. So she helped me really along the way. She was always supportive. I came in here running over her, and she just let me do it.
Now, they had a restaurant already, Dookie's.
Yeah, and they were making money in the 40s. They were popular. My mother-in-law and father-in-law were popular. And people used to come here to have a bottle of beer, or they used to have setups in those days. You know, you buy a half a pint of bourbon or something, and you get a Coke and a 7-Up with it. And
they call that a setup, huh?
A setup, uh-huh. Well, people wanted something to eat with it. So then she would make them sandwiches or fried oysters and fried shrimps, things that they did not get at home every day, you see. She just made it work, and she was making money back then. She really was. People loved her, and they loved my father-in-law. So when I came in, I said, oh, we got to change. We got to do like those other people do.
Because you had a little experience in the restaurant business
in
on the other side of town. Yeah.
Now, black people were not accustomed to Newburgs and cream sauces. You know, we had brown gravies and red gravies. We didn't have... So I'm going to bring this lobster thermidor in here. People said, she's crazy. Nobody will want this stuff. But you learn, and then you say, wait. Push back, Leah. You have to do what people want, you know. So then I start making the oyster dressings and stuffing the chicken breast with the oyster dressing, making the griots, things that they wanted, things that they could relate to. And then when integration came, I still say the best thing about integration was the learning experience for everybody. You get to eat out. You get to learn about food. Now you can serve them anything.
Well, Leah, I tell you, I want you to stay on. We're going to take us a little quick break because I want to talk about the huge influence you had when integration set in and you had an African-American restaurant of fame in New Orleans at that point getting off of the ground. And then you were able in the back rooms to bring the groups together. That's a very fascinating story. And to think that here, so many years later, the accomplishments that Dookie Chase and Leah Chase have been known for in the world. We're going to be back in just a minute. Don't you dare go anywhere, people. The best is yet to come.
World is going on with Celtic music? Are all the fusions with Latin, African, Balkan tunes and rhythms creating a world music soup or a cutting-edge Celtic sound that enhances the global world music vibe? See what you think as we circumnavigate the world of Celtic music on The Thistle and Shamrock.
Coming up Sunday evening at 6 here on KRVS.
Comics avec Val. Bienvenue dans le monde francophone. C'est tous les jeudis à 9h sur KRVS, la radio Acadie.
Hi everyone, this is Pat Mitchell-Worley, and coming up on Beale Street Caravan, we are going to spend the entire show at the Memphis in May Beale Street Music Fest. First, we'll hear from Alexis P. Suter and then Valerie June. Our feature host segments will continue on Heavenly Sight, A Vision Out of Blindness from Murray Street Productions and Artemis Media. That's all coming up next time on Beale Street Caravan.
Tonight at 11 on KRVS.
T'as des misères à réveiller les dimanches matins? Mais allume la radio avec moi, Louis Michaud. Tous les dimanches matins, 7h jusqu'à 9h, on va charrer en français, écouter de la musique en français et boire un petit tasse de café. Join me, Louis Michaud, if you have trouble waking up in the Sunday mornings. Just turn your radio to KRVS from 7 to 9 and hear me with Le Réveil, The Awakening en français.
Everybody, welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. We're so happy to have you with us today, and what a special guest we have with us, Leah Chase, celebrating her 90th birthday and being honored in New Orleans tonight with a magnificent event where all of the public is coming in true fashion to pay homage to a woman who deserves so much for what she has given, even though humbly she say everybody's given to her. Y'all, I want to welcome you all back. And Leah, I wanted to just jump into the question that we were talking about a minute ago. Times were certainly different back in the 50s and 60s, and so was the Chase's restaurant. It was an African-American restaurant at the time, and you put a little bit of the Leah Chase touch on it. Why don't we start right there and tell us about your first day of life, and then how did it move forward?
I tell you, with the help of so many people that helped me, you get knocked down, but John, you know how it is. You get knocked down, but you get up again, and I tell everybody, there's always going to be those monkey wrenches in your thing. So you're all kind of things you have to cross over and do. And I did that. You know, people didn't agree. Well, it was a new day, a new thing. Everything was coming on new. And then here comes the Freedom Riders. We were trying to work and get integration through the NAACP, which was a slow movement. You didn't want to offend people. I never forget A.P. Turo. He never wanted to offend the whites. He didn't want to do that, which was right. You don't want to offend people trying to get what you want. But it was a slow movement, and when these civil rights people came along, it was something we didn't understand. The older ones of us didn't understand. We thought it was crazy. You're going to jail. You're doing this. You're doing that. And we were frightened, what is what we were. We were frightened that people would turn against us and all that. But sometimes you need to ram those doors open and just take the risk and do what you got to do. And I learned that. Just take a risk. Just take the chance and do what you have to do. So that was a good thing for me. But I had people coming here, meeting here before we had integration. You know, I remember Mayor Dillashaps Morrison coming through here when he had to meet with all the blacks and work out things. They met upstairs in that little room upstairs. They came, and it was really a fun thing to see them meet up there and talk about things and work things out. But it's been a long, hard struggle for me. But anyway, it worked out.
And Leah, the 60s, you know, they were tumultuous times in America, and while other southern cities were torn apart during that era, New Orleans was somewhat spared. The civil rights leaders, the black and whites, as you say, they entered the restaurant a lot of times secretively, just so that they could tear those walls down. Who were some of the people meeting there at that time when they were talking about integration?
Well, it was Idril Augustine, Dr. Mitchell, Dr. Young, Andrew Young's daddy, even though that was so funny with Andy Young, because Andy Young went off to follow Martin Luther King, and his daddy said, "You are crazy. You're just crazy." I remember Dr. Young fussing at Andy, "You're crazy. You're not going to make any money." You know, they educated their children to earn a living, and here you go and marching behind a man with nothing. They didn't understand that. But it really was something. And I fed all those people. I fed Big Daddy King. He was something else, that Martin Luther King's father. Martin Luther King ate here. But King didn't stay a long time places. He was on the move. A.L. Davis and all those people. I go way back with all those people.
Now, you had the Kennedys as well. I know the Attorney General during the Kennedy administration, the brother came in. I mean, he was
there.
So you had a lot of national figures.
That was too funny. Little John came in when he was young, and you know that's when all the girls was around. He became his girlfriend, sat to a table. For some reason or other, John, they both went to the dressing room at the same time. She went in ladies. He went, when he came back, they had cleared the table. Oh, my God, you don't do that. I was having a fit. But you feed all those people, and you just remember all the people you fed, the people like Lena Horne, and you just remember frying that chicken for her. She loved fried chicken. Sarah Vaughan loved her stuffed crabs. And you just meet with all those people that really kind of uplift you. I just met with Cecily Tyson a couple of weeks ago. Now, that's a lady that I go way back with. She's so funny. She said, "Leah, you remember when I came? Miles and I got married. What day did we come by you?" I said, "How you want me to remember what day you come by?" I can't remember one day to the other. You want me to remember when you and Miles came in?
Now, Leah, of all the things that you've seen, I mean, from Madisonville on to the stages in New York City with James Beard Foundation and all that, what excites you about an accomplishment? What's the accomplishment in your life that you can say, here is the one thing I'm personally feeling really good about? What would that be?
You feel good when your own people honor you. When I was honored by the NAACP along with Pat Taylor, I almost had to battle for that because the blacks were against Pat Taylor and they were going to picket. I said, if you picket in front of my door, you will be the sorriest lot, because they were against Pat Taylor and his program for children, which was a good program. But anyway, I appreciate your own people. I got the Loving Cup, John. I received it in tears because that was unbelievable for that to come to a neighborhood like this. It ought to uplift the neighborhood. You see, here, I'm bringing this here to you. You ought to be able to pick yourself up now and come on. And those kind of things, those awards that you receive, I receive them hoping they will help somebody else pick up.
Now, Leah, I always think when I hear of all the things that you accomplish in your life, all the people you have touched, all the great chefs who have inspired to be as good as Leah Chase, me watching over your shoulder as you breaded chicken and cooked that melon tart, and I sat there and said, this is a cook, is all I can say. She's a cook's cook. And you and I are sitting on an airplane. I was a young boy going to New York City, and I accidentally got that
seat. I talked about that the other day, John. That was something. John is passing Hoghead cheese out on a plane. We go to New York. I don't know what the heck I'm doing. I don't know from nothing about what I'm doing. I'm just following. But that is the one thing I say to everybody about these chefs in Louisiana. They were all like you and really were acclaimed. And then they took me along and I didn't know from nothing. So I learned from them, and that is the best feeling in my life. I will always be grateful to these chefs.
And Leah, what we learn from you is immeasurable. We learn how to love, and we learn how to cook from the heart and soul, and we learn how to come to understand that a good plate of fried chicken livers or a good round steak or a good stuffed crab is as
right.
good as anything you can put on the table, as long as the diner felt welcomed in the place. Baby, I got back from New York that day. I say I was lucky enough to sit next to you on the airplane. We didn't know each other at the time. I was just a kid, and I got back home, and they say, what happened? I said, I sat next to Leah Chase on the airplane. I didn't say anything about Bloomingdale's or all the places we went. I just say I sat next to Leah Chase, and we ate hogshead cheese. I brought my own hogshead cheese. That was in the day you could bring anything on an airplane, Leah.
I think Chris had a muffalaba, all that commotion on the plane, Michelle. That was something. And Leah, when I look back my life, that all these men were powerful men in their industry, and they took me along, I still can't focus on that. Why they did it or how they did it, I was just so happy to do that because I'd never been anywhere. I didn't know anything, but here I am up there with these big boys trying to learn.
And Leah, we had so much fun, you and I, doing cooking demonstrations. Remember, we went to Pennsylvania, we went to the colleges, you and I, we did Cajun and Creole.
We did. I'll never forget, John used to take me to Penn College, and that was quite an experience there. That's how I learned to love snickerdoodles and chocolate soup.
Leah, a couple of other things right here. I want to say you've had honors. I mean, I walk through your restaurant. Every president you can imagine has eaten there. Everybody of acclaim has eaten there. But yet, when Disney needed to bring Tiana to the Princess and the Frog's life, they chose Leah Chase as the inspiration. You became the inspiration for the Princess and the Frog. My God.
That's when you know you made it, Leah.
Michelle, did little children come looking for Tiana? I said, I'm sorry, Tiana just got old. But they come looking for Tiana. They bring their dolls. And it was a good thing. If Disney ever did anything, that was a good thing they did. Because they had never had an African-American little princess before. Mm-hmm. They had Snow White. They had Belle. They had Cinderella. And so that was a nice thing. And they did a good job on that. Now, I bust that Mr. Obama for putting hot stuff in my gumbo before he tasted it.
Oh.
And so I told them that story. And to me, that was a negative, but they took it, and in this little movie, they got Mama Yoda just putting that hot stuff in that gumbo pot. They made a positive out of that. So here's Mama Yoda putting that Tabasco all in that hot stuff.
Let me ask you something. Every birthday, it's a little reflective to me, and I can only imagine turning 90 and looking back at the hardships, but looking back at the accomplishments and looking back at the highlights of your career. I mean, as you just mentioned, presidents, and I mean, we all know that segregation was broken apart in New Orleans over a bowl of gumbo and fried chicken in the back rooms at Duke and Chase. We know that, and we appreciate that. And I've had the honor of inducting you into our Hall of Fame, and where you're an inspiration to our students at the Chef John Falls Culinary Institute. You are continually held in the highest esteem of all of the inductees. What's your thoughts today? I mean, on your 90th birthday, and people coming from around the world to honor you, what are you thinking?
I am so grateful. I cannot believe it myself. Sometimes I go from day to day, John, and like I tell you, I get up in the morning and I pray and I said, look, my niece say God's going to get pretty well tired of you. So now I don't even ask him. I tell him what I want. I say, look, God, you got to take me through the day. I can't make it here. But I'm so grateful. And I sit down and I wonder how this happened, and I'm so grateful it happened to me, but it happened to people. And you talk about presidents and this, that, and the other one who came. It's that everyday little person that comes through here, that walks my way, that gives me the courage to keep going. They good people, they little people, they all kinds of people, but that everyday person gives me the courage to keep going on, to keep moving on. And, John, I owe you my life. You have done so much for me, till I just don't know. But then you do so much for so many people. I have another man, Richard Colton. You'll be surprised, Richard Colton. He got me on his Christmas card, John. He and I. Now, won't that cause a scandal? Here's little black me and little white Richard.
Well, Leah, you deserve so much more than this world can ever give you. I mean, you do have honors that you certainly enjoy because you earned them the hard way. There's no doubt about that. When I was honored enough to speak on your behalf when they inducted you in the museum in New Orleans and put up the Leah Chase exhibit, I consider that such a great honor to do that.
It is, John, and I still don't know how I've gotten so fortunate that people will think that much of me. It really is good because it makes me feel like I can work harder, I can work more, I can push harder, you know, and that's what keeps me going.
Well, let me say this too, Leah. I felt some of the pain. I really did. I felt some of the pain that I know you had to go through in your life when I was president of the American Culinary Federation and having such a respect for you and a love for you. We were having a big convention in New Orleans of all the chefs of the world. I mean, we had 40 countries coming in, 2,000 chefs coming to New Orleans.
Right.
And I decided to put you on the cover of the American Culinary Federation's magazine.
John, I tell you, I couldn't believe that. Here I am, all these big boys that I can never come with, I can never be with. I was so grateful for that. I said, look, how did I get this? And I just want people to know that if you work hard, somebody gonna see you, somebody gonna help you, and I'll never forget you for that, John. That was the biggest thing in my life, but I was so grateful for that.
Well, they were paying homage to a woman who deserved it so much, and I just was so proud to even know you. And I was telling Michelle the other day, we were talking about your gumbo zab and Holy Thursday, and mm-hmm. I say when that day comes that Leah Chase decides she's not doing Holy Thursday, she can rest assured that John Fultz is going to pick it up, and I'm going to carry it until he put me in a coffin. I'm going to carry Leah Chase's gumbo zab, and I'm going to carry it on.
Revolution will have this big gumbo zab.
Look, the day Leah Chase ain't doing it anymore, John Fultz picking it up, and it's going to be Leah Chase dead until he closed my coffin cover. I'm going to carry on that gumbo zab. I want you to know that.
Well, thank you so much, John, because you really helped me through this.
All I can say, look, Marilyn Monroe did it for the president. I'm going to do it for you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Leah, the love of my life. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
We love you, Leah.
Happy birthday, Leah. Thank you for being with us.
Okay, thank you, Michelle, for all you do.
Anyway, y'all, hey, look, I'm dedicating this whole show to Leah. There's nothing else for me to say. Leah, God bless you.
Hi, this is Joe from the Dunwells inviting you to visit E-Town this week. I'll be joined by Nick Helton and Joe Ely and the winner of the E-Achievement Award. That's this week in E-Town.
Tuesday at noon on KRVS.